one. I guess I'm supposed to spotlight. Really don't have to spotlight. I think that our audio is good. I don't think you have to use a headphone and mic set. I could hear all of you well. Okay. So I'm going to start this off, okay? Good evening and welcome to the Ward 6 Councillor Candidates Forum. This event is being recorded. The audio will be available on the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour podcast. The URL is in the chat. As we gather, we are reminded that Guelph is situated on treaty land that is rich with Indigenous history and home to many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people today. We are meeting on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabeg and Haudenosaunee people and the treaty lands of the Mississaugas of the Credit. Land acknowledgements are a small step towards building new relationships of understanding and respect with Indigenous peoples as we confront the legacy of colonialism. Let us all offer our hands in friendship as we work towards a just future. My name is Tanya, and I'm your host and moderator for this evening's event. My co-host will monitor the chat section and make sure that the tech is running smoothly. This event is hosted by the Guelph Wellington Coalition for Social Justice, a community-based coalition of individuals and organizations who advocate for equity, inclusivity, and the well-being of our community. Questions for the candidates were formulated by a new community group called Get Involved Well. Tonight's agenda consists of introductions and opening remarks, followed by a Q&A session and ending with closing remarks. In the opening remarks, each candidate has 90 seconds to introduce themselves, their campaign, and their vision for the City of Guelph. The Q&A consists of 7 questions prepared by Get Involved Guelph. And again, each candidate will have 90 seconds to respond to each question. It is expected that candidates will not name other candidates. If named, that candidate will have 30 seconds to respond. I can't imagine this being a problem because I don't see why any candidate would want to give another candidate time. So we look forward to an informative and respectful Q&A session. And after the round of prepared questions, if we have time, then the virtual floor will be open to questions from the public. So please post your questions in the chat box. And each candidate will have 90 seconds for closing remarks. Candidates, our timekeeper will notify you when you have 15 seconds left to speak. And when the time is up, you will be muted. The candidates who have joined us this evening are Ken Yi Chu, Mark McKinnon, Dominique O'Rourke, and Chetna Robinson. Okay, so please, I would ask Chetna to start us off with your opening remarks.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for hosting this as well. I'm very excited, very, very nervous as well, but this is going to be great. I appreciate the opportunity. So my name is Chetna Robinson. And honestly, I live by 2 rules. 1, be good. And 2, don't be bad. If you elect me, I will be good. I will listen to your needs and proactively engage with you in order to understand the impact of council decisions. We know that vibrant neighborhoods are dense with a diversity of land use and a short distance from transit. So we have no reason, no excuse, and no way to justify not building Guelph the way that we know is right. I will not be bad. I will not pay lip service to our community plan while voting yes to policies that do not protect our environment or create value or allow us to play and explore. I will not make decisions without remembering the interconnectedness of issues like affordability and sustainability and safety. Our mental and physical health is affected by the design of the city we live in. And if we create an inefficient urban form, then we're basically deferring the responsibilities of progress to our children. My kids have enough on their shoulders. They don't need to be paying for our decisions. So we need to be thinking about that. And we need to be thinking about our tree canopy and our water and our transportation. And you need stronger proactive engagement, because an informed electorate is the foundation of a successful democracy. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to be your voice.
Thank you, Chetna. Ken?
Hi, everybody. It's great to see you all today. And thank you for this opportunity just to be able to speak on the issues. And I also want to just thank some of my council candidate colleagues also just for showing up today. It's a privilege and responsibility to be able to run for council. And my name's Ken, and I'm running 2-year next Ward 6 City Councilor. I'm a municipal urban designer, University of Guelph alumni, and just your neighbor who lives off on Revel. And over the years, I've built up lots of private and public sector design experience working in multidisciplinary teams. And I'm running here because right now in the life of our city, Guelph's growing Ward 6 needs a city councilor with the skills and expertise to help address the realities of today. Today, we need a leader to help facilitate the conversations and decision-making process that takes place in council chambers. We need someone to be able to work with staff and ask the right questions on behalf of our communities. Having lived and worked in both Canada and the United States, my work is centered around building strong and vibrant communities. As a design professional, I have witnessed schools, commercial centers, and community facilities break ground. I've done cost estimates for capital projects, and I know what it takes to get a project off the ground. With that, I just want the people of Guelph and Ward 6 to know that we have an amazing city with incredible potential, and it would be an honor to help deliver creative solutions to our city. We have a lot of potential, and we need to focus on what's positive and move ahead forward with today. And thank you so much for the opportunity. I look forward to the discussions tonight.
Thank you. Mark?
Yeah, thank you, Tanya, and it's great to see everyone tonight. My name is Mark McKinnon, and it has been an absolute pleasure to serve as your Ward 6 counselor for the past 2 terms. But the job that I began 8 years ago, it's not yet finished, and there is still a lot of work to get done. Experience matters, perhaps more than ever before in this upcoming election. Council is going to be faced with unprecedented affordability challenges as we emerge from a pandemic economy and into a new reality of high inflation, along with issues touching upon community inclusion and social well-being. Guelph needs experienced leaders who can begin tackling these pressures on day one after the election, fully informed and ready to act immediately. Consistency and experience on council is critical because the stakes are so high. My leadership as the city's chair of both corporate services and public services is a strong testament to my record of good governance and has contributed to the stabilities of the city with its success. I've lived in Guelph for more than 30 years, the majority right here in Ward 6. Guelph is my forever home. It's not merely a stepping stone to the next destination. As a resident, I've been both a renter and a homeowner. I've raised 2 children from birth to adulthood in South Guelph. I've owned a popular business in the downtown core, and I'm a proud U of G alumnus. I'm intimately familiar with both the benefits and challenges of living in South Guelph. And I believe the skills and passion and unique perspective that I bring to council make me the right choice to continue representing and advocating for Ward 6 residents as I've done for many years. Thanks.
Thank you. Dominique?
Thank you, and thanks for hosting the forum. I think it's important. I'm Dominique O'Rourke. I'm a mom, a volunteer, a 22-year resident of Ward 6. I'm a current city councillor finishing my first term, and I have learned a ton, which I appreciate. I have a degree in economics from the University of Ottawa and a master's degree in leadership from U of G. I've worked in communications and public affairs in the private, public, and nonprofit sector for more than 20 years. And actually, as a communications consultant, I had the opportunity to work with Community Foundations of Canada, and with them did original research and wrote 3 national reports, one on youth called Generation Flux, how that traditional path is broken for young people, and one on art and belonging, and one on sport and belonging. So I believe in data-driven decisions and policy recommendations. I also worked with the Canadian Index of Wellbeing, so I'm extremely familiar with their model. In fact, Guelph was the first municipality to use their model, I believe in 2011. I also had the opportunity to work recently with the Waterloo Region Crime Prevention Council, as well as community justice initiatives. So I'm quite familiar with a number of social justice issues. It's as a longtime volunteer, 10-year volunteer for the Guelph Community Foundation, that I helped research and write Guelph's 2018 Vital Signs. So I not only come at the issues from a council perspective, but I also come at it from a data-driven and volunteer perspective. I'm a forward-looking, budget-conscious representative who knows the issues well and who works for the residents of Ward 6. I'm asking for your vote on October 24th to be your voice for Ward 6, to bring about balanced development, open communication, a healthy, safe, prosperous, and age-friendly city. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And now we will start the questions. The first one is, the vision statement of Guelph's strategic plan includes building an inclusive, connected, prosperous city where we look after each other and our environment. While most Guelphites value diversity, some citizens still suffer from forms of abuse, such as racism and anti-2SLGBTQ+ incidents. How will you help Guelph progress towards its inclusivity vision? And Chetna, could you start us off, please?
If I can find the mute button. Yep, there we go. Yeah, thank you so much. I think this is a really important question. And I want to say that I recognize that there are so many great people on City Council that are allies and do advocate for this. But the fact of the matter is, there's also never been a person of color on City Council. And I don't want to say that being a person of color, I can then be a voice for all marginalized communities. But I can also, but I have the experience to recognize that as a person of color, I get frustrated that there is only so much that a good heart can do. Sometimes you have to have had the experience. And so I would recognize that I can't be the voice for all marginalized communities, which means we need to research issues and look at concerns into the community. Sault Ste. Marie has a really great anti-racism committee that delivered surveys to 90% of the municipality, and we're able to get community discussions on what actions to take. We can also host cultural events to create awareness of diversity in the community, and then have committees that can organize cross-cultural dialogue to provide access and information on racism. A lot of it is really just about training and educating stakeholders in conflict resolution. And one of the key things is honestly just making sure that we speak up, you know, denouncing hate crimes when they occur. So I think being from a marginalized community, I would recognize that we need to consult these communities when we are talking, right? So that would be my main strategy, is to make sure that we connect and engage and educate.
Thank you. Dominique?
Sure, thanks. So I think there are two pieces, right? One is your own work of understanding bias, blind spots, understanding systemic inequalities and how we can approach those. It's by listening, it's by research. So there's that piece that I have begun to do and continue to do. The other piece in terms of inclusivity, I think has a lot of outreach and inreach. So I actually belong to a French language minority. So it's a linguistic minority outside of Quebec. So I understand, not in a different dimension, obviously not from an ethnic perspective, but understand what it is to be sometimes marginalized. In November, actually, I'm going to host an event at City Hall, whether I'm elected or not, for Francophone Immigration Week, to invite the community in so we can talk about what is a municipal, you know, what's a municipal government, what can we do? And I actually would like to replicate that afterwards. And so we should be inviting communities to come to council chambers on a night that is not a council night. Sit there, let's talk about some issues, let's be comfortable in the chambers and why you can come. And I just want to say to anybody who's a permanent resident or who's not a citizen, while you can't vote in the election, you can certainly delegate to council. You can certainly reach out to your councillors. And I'm not sure that message is out there, but we represent absolutely everyone. So I think from my perspective, it's both a personal one of listening and growth. It's also as a councillor of listening and understanding where I can be helpful. And as a council, it's trying to identify any kind of barriers and addressing those. The reports on art and belonging and sport and belonging address a lot of inclusivity. Things like, does our cultural, you know, do our cultural events, the River Run Center, invite people in? Are they diverse enough?
Thank you. Thank you,
Parks Dominique. And Rec, are they diverse enough? So it's inviting people into the conversation.
Dominique.
Yep.
Sorry. Ken.
Well, thanks for the question. I think first, you know, perspective matters, and, you know, it's night and day that I'm a Chinese Canadian, and I'm also born and raised in Canada as well. And most of my upbringing has been around a lot of ethnic minorities who have a vested stake in Canada and just being part of our community and our society. I think oftentimes we like to kind of pit each other against different stripes and colors, but I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to building authentic relationships. It starts with having meaningful conversations with folks at the door. As part of my campaign, it was also important for me to create this as an outreach strategy just for residents and people that don't currently identify with Guelph politics to be welcomed and informed. I think only 35% of the population voted last time around, and a lot of that does not include ethnic minorities who are predominantly situated here in the South End. So what I've done practically is I've assembled a team to host a number of events in the South End and also right by Courtright Hills. And we've drawn over 400 people. And just the conversations alone is incredible. And that's what really, I think, starts with, you know, being able to get out to the door and also at the end of the day, having those conversations to build upon trust is what we need.
Thank you. And Mark.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm very cognizant that my perspective is going to be from a person with privilege. I grew up in a small town, you know, a few thousand people, lots of different colorful language being used. And a lot of it's trying to be unlearning what you learn as a kid and try to be better. And I think since my time on council, I've seen some great progress that the city has done in particular. And I've tried to follow that lead by expanding my own horizons as well. So the 2022 revision to the Guelph Community Plan, that's a solid foundation on which we can build inclusion and representation. It's not the end all be all, but it was a great start as part of the strategic plan that the city has. Council, we also approved that the creation of a new staff position. So that's the senior advisor of equity, anti-racism, and Indigenous initiatives. And again, that's not going to be the one solution, but those are good starts. And of course, we also have a lot of our different accessory groups. So we accessory advisory committee, we have other committees that we reach out to either ad hoc or things that we have permanently to try to get that perspective from people that may be more marginalized communities that don't have the same voice. Certainly the city has done a lot of outreach and is increasing our participation with the Indigenous communities to try to reach that even further. And that was actually one of the things that encouraged me to sign up for the University of Alberta. They have an amazing digital course. I learned a lot from it. So I took it online. I encourage anyone to sign up for that if you can. It really opens your eyes about the difference between maybe the Indigenous relationships in Canada and the US. So I highly recommend that. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, so we're on to our second question. In December 2021, the city committed to prepare and work towards interim community-wide greenhouse gas emissions targets by the end of June 2022. However, targets for the city corporation itself, only those have been developed, and they account for only 2.2% of the community's total. What would you do to accelerate the implementation of the city's commitment to a comprehensive city-community partnership for Guelph to reach net zero by 2050? And Dominique, could you start us off, please?
Sure. I would love to see council do a lot more to engage our business community to understand what their plans are. As you pointed out, the city's contribution is 2.2%. So we are very focused on reducing the city's own emissions. Another huge area is in transportation emissions. So by investing $250 million in transit over the next 10 years and cycling facilities and active transportation, that's encouraging people to get out of their own personal vehicles, which is a large source of emissions. We're going to bring in a zero or low interest loan for housing retrofits, which will encourage homeowners. It'll be a stackable loan with the federal government programs to include improve energy efficiency in your home, which will also help. So that's the residential piece. The other massive piece is the ICI sector. And I got to say, I was disappointed to hear the school board say that their first high school in 50 years is not going to be net zero, and that they're going to talk about, you know, energy efficiency at site plan. That's not when you talk about heat pumps. So we need all of our partners on board. And it's the students who are coming to council so concerned about climate. And we get it. I've got two teenagers of my own. So we really need all of the sectors, public, private, and nonprofit, to be on board with us. So we need to understand a lot more what the manufacturing sector's plans are. Thanks.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. And I've talked to several people about this particular thing came up because the question is, well, why don't we have interim targets for the community? And a lot of it comes down from a corporate perspective is, you know, we can encourage the community to move in certain directions. Of course, as was mentioned, we can have policy shifts regarding modal split and active transportation, but we have no control over what or how a business operates, how a factory operates, what kind of different energies that they use and policies and procedures within their business. As municipal government, we have very limited control, which is why we're focused on the corporate goals, you know, whether it's an interim target or the final target. And under the community energy plan, we do have larger targets for the community. Interim targets, what's going to happen within 5 years? It seems a little arrogant for the city to try to set up what they think that the community should move towards when we don't have any real carrots that we can use to move it in that direction, other than from the individual. So as was mentioned, we can certainly encourage active transportation and electrify our buses and encourage people to change the modal split. But in terms of what the larger business community is going to do, what people are going to do in their houses, what people are businesses are going to do in their places of business, that is largely federal and provincial, their responsibilities. And if we need to make significant changes moving forward on climate change and targets, then we need to make sure that the upper level governments are doing their fair share to set those regulations and the legislation, which is going to force other people to fall in line so we can have a better growth. Thanks.
Thank you. Chetna.
Yeah, I think that, you know, municipalities have a lot of resources and power to ensure environmental responsibility. So I think it's really imperative that our newly elected council, this is a reality and we need to plan for it and we need to engage with citizens on this. So I would absolutely work with transportation, waste, energy, building sectors. I think the key thing though, too, is that the things that we do have power over, like Mark says, I can't go to a business and be like, oh, I'm forcing you to do this, but I can make sure the businesses that are built are pursuing green space. We can pursue increasing our tree canopy. We can also partner with residents and with industry and with local businesses. We see it in other municipalities. This isn't something that we would be leading the charge on. We can actually just look at other cities in Ontario and say, this is how you have worked with the community to achieve your reduction goals. I think a big thing that we need to look at is coupling the processes of constructive production, like using the materials that we use to build things again when they break down, so we can have cycled materials that is sustainable. It's a big transition to sustainability that I think will be really important to have this material cycle, and because it progressively reduces the demand for like virgin minerals and reduces the quantity of waste that's produced. We also just need to make sure that we're building green, like we are building houses that have renewable and minimal energy. So we're not increasing, you know, in the houses, any of the output that we're having. Make sure we're building houses that are harvesting water and thinking about the impact to stormwater and drainage. And then increasing transit. The primary barrier to active transport, biking, walking, jogging, all of that is available infrastructure. If we have the infrastructure, then we can absolutely encourage people to get on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ken?
Everyone made some great points, I think. At the end of the day, the province and the federal government is what are the institutions that set the higher level targets. And at the city, we're in the business of implementation. So I like to think of practical measures that we can do to encourage a better behavior and also just more cognizant thinking on how we can better steward our environment. And one of those things that I think we can practically do is work with staff to update our tree technical manual. That's an easy first step that we can do to create some better design interventions at the site plan level with developers in order to try to boost our tree canopy. One of the projects that I worked on with a lot of residents before I decided to run for council was seeing how we could preserve a lot of our mature trees that's fronting a DRCA wetland. There are a lot of cost savings that we identified just by drawing out the importance of saving green space, not just paying lip service, but actually showing how that would increase property value and at the same time to beautify a space that residents and future tenants can enjoy. So I like to think that a lot of these solutions when we talk about going green is really design interventions. And one of those things that I really want to push is for a refresh of our tree technical manual to increase our urban tree canopy. So that's just one of many things. You can read my platform on my website, and I'll just leave it for there. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And we will now go on to the third question. There is a growing demand for more housing in Guelph, including affordable, social, and supportive housing. The province has mandated substantial growth, and it will be a challenge to grow in a sustainable manner. Question part one, how would you accelerate the rate of infill, intensification, and mixed-use development in Guelph? And part two, would you welcome social housing construction in your ward, along with increasing the annual funding for the Affordable Housing Reserve? Mark, will you start us off, please?
Yeah, thank you. So in terms of, you know, building more houses and getting them on more quickly. So I'm a real estate broker. Not everyone knows that, but, you know, I'm very familiar with the housing sector and the challenges that have come up, particularly in this past few years since the pandemic started. And council itself can do very little to directly affect the market rate for houses. You know, we have some levers that we can pull, but in terms of the actual pricing, well, we can't control what someone from Toronto is going to come in and offer for a house. And one of the other factors that people, of course, talk about is supply. Yes, absolutely. Supply and demand. If we had more houses in Guelph, that will affect the affordability and be able to get more online more quickly. That's something that I'm certainly committed to as a pro-housing candidate. We need to approve houses that staff recommend. If there's a solid planning rationale and staff come forward and say, here's the rationale for it. And it's, you know, these are our professionals. They know what solid planning rationale is. And yeah, we should absolutely afford the approve those to get them built as quickly as you can. But once again, it's not really up to council in terms of when a developer comes in with an application. If they get an application approved, when are they going to start? I mean, you know, there's one at the corner of Gordon and Stone that was been approved for quite a while. They ended up winning a case when it came to the appeal board, and they still haven't built. It's been years. So we can't control that, but we can pull some levers and make sure that we're on board with staff to go forward. And just quickly regarding the social housing in my ward, absolutely. Build it right next to me. We need that everywhere in Guelph, but it makes sense to put it where people are congregating more. So that's why
Thank you.
Why it's
another. Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Ken.
Oh, I love this question. And thank you so much for bringing it up. I think people have the perception that whenever development comes up, it's this big, bad, scary thing. So, and I just wanted to dispel that myth that development is all bad and we're not going to have good quality and it's going to decrease our quality of life and ruin our environment. You know, at the end of the day, the city has a mandate to grow. And it's up to us and incumbent on us to be able to manage growth. So I'm not all for, I'm not all pro-development. I'm for context-sensitive development. And that's really what we need to address, especially when we start to evaluate the implementation of the Claire Maltby secondary plan that's right near and dear to many Ward 6 residents. We need to have quality design, and we need to ensure that we provide the right infrastructure to be able to service our environment that we're trying to build on top of. We have the Periscope Moraine that has significant aquifers and it's right very close to the Arkell Springs. So we have to have a prudent conversation on how we're going to provide this infrastructure to service development that's context sensitive, but at the same time to protect our significant groundwater, which is very near and dear to many Guelph residents, present and future. And we need really to provide staff with leadership as well, right? It's not all about listening to staff recommendation reports. We actually have to provide feedback that is reflective of what the constituents right here and now are talking about here today.
Time.
Thank you. Dominique?
So I believe that we need smart development. There's absolutely going to be intensification. We see it, a lot of it along Gordon Street. It has to meet the needs of today while being sensitive to the neighborhood and able to adapt in the future. And so absolutely to infill, the next term of council will have the comprehensive zoning review, and we will remove exclusionary zoning so that areas that were previously protected as only single family dwellings will be able to go to a triplex, maybe a quad. I think that's important. I think it's important to have growth throughout the city and not strictly concentrated in one area, because there are impacts. In terms of mixed use development, I think it's brilliant. I've talked a lot to people in the Dallin area. The 15-minute city works and the people there are thrilled. So, you know, I support that. There are currently 6,000 units that could be built today. I think that we need development that meets the needs of the residents who will go into those new buildings. And so people who are in the highest density buildings need the best backyards. They still need some amenities. In terms of social housing in my ward, absolutely. You can put a group home anywhere right now anyways. And we need the social housing. I think there should be a nice broad, you know, broad variety of it, as well as supportive housing.
Okay, thank you. And Chetna.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking this. So I have a degree in urban anthropology, so I intimately know that the way we build is going to affect our health, and that includes our mental health. And a lot of times the issues that are facing people that are in social housing, they're in transitory stages or they're facing difficulties in life. And so if we build right, we will be able to kind of help them as well as, you know, giving them housing. We know that mixed use neighborhoods financially outperform car centric neighborhoods every time. So we do need to focus on those higher density developments. So right now the issue is that there's not enough small units to rent or buy to meet the affordability needs of smaller households. So I would absolutely support single family dwellings, apartments, townhouses with smaller lots and with green space. I think a key thing too is that I would do the homework and talk to the constituents and make sure I identify issues that will affect them. This is a big thing about anthropology. You can't just look at a community and say, I recognize your needs. You have to go talk to them and say, oh, I didn't realize that if we put this here, then it's going to affect the way that you're able to get to work or the way you interact with your children, and it's going to affect your mental health. So we have developers right now that are creating houses that produce as much energy as they use. And so I think that we just need to make decisions that will help with that. And absolutely, I would support social housing. I would support it not just in my neighborhood, but throughout the city, because it needs to happen. The only way that we can help people is to provide them the resources, and housing first is the way to solve a lot of people that are struggling, and we need to help the people that are struggling.
Okay, thank you. I'll go on to our next question. As an anchor of the Baker District development, the new main branch library will bring significant social, economic, and tourism benefits to Guelph. The project is well underway. Breaking contracts would cost taxpayers millions, and we'd also lose the housing units that are attached to the project. Would you please share your views on the Baker Street District development? And Ken, can you start us off, please?
Thank you. So this is a very sensitive topic that comes up probably one of every five houses that I've encountered while door knocking. And we are well far away ahead with the implementation of the new library at the Baker Street District. And I'm all for a library, but I do want to evaluate how we can better go about our funding mechanisms in which we can go about implementing this library, so there's less of a hit on taxpayers' dollars. So this project's been underway. There's been many efforts by the library to go about upgrading their current facility. And I do think that there are ways in which we can better incentivize people to be supportive of this library project, and also find ways in which we can go about finding better funding to help support this library, because it's not all said and done with the approval. So there are ways in which we can work together in the next term of council to better prioritize our spending and also find ways to alleviate some of the costs on taxpayer dollars. So that's what I would say. And I would also say as well that this could be a great opportunity for economic revitalization within the Baker Street Corps. And we need to capitalize on this responsibility of a project moving forward.
Thank you. Chetna.
There it is. Thank you so much. I don't know why the mute button's not working for me today. Yeah, so this is a really divisive issue in the city. And a lot of people that I talk to are either like, well, I love it or I hate it. And I honestly, I don't understand how this is such a divisive issue. Because to me, like a library is such a sanctity, you know, libraries, I think a lot of people are focusing on the cost of it. I think that's the main issue. But a lot of times the money that you put into the library, you get back fourfold. A lot of studies have shown that it's actually a wise investment into the economy. It's also a wise investment into the future of our communities, because it focuses on, I want to focus on the value rather than the cost, you know, like, because it's not just about books. I feel like we need to rebrand it. We need to don't call it a library, call it the GPL Community Space, because this is a place that is going to be a savior in early days of parenthood. People use them to job search or to attend classes. I work at a college, and a lot of my students don't have places at home that they can go to class. If they don't have a library, they can't come to our classes. So it's one of the few places too that you can go without spending time and money. And if our library right now is derelict, we had to rebuild it anyway. And so we have this big scary number, but if you break it down, you know, like 28 million is from infrastructure renewal reserves. There's 14 million from development charges. It ends up being something like 78 cents a month in terms of this levy. And it's 78 cents a month that is an investment in our community, and it's an investment in the future of our children. I think people who are struggling, they need the internet, they need the computer. I cannot imagine going through my early days of parenthood without having the library to go through. So it's been planned for, it has been budgeted for, and I think that if we keep delaying it, we're just going to get more and more and more and more expensive. And so I'm going to really work on talking to people and saying, come and check it out, you know, come take a language class there, come and, you know, meet friends there.
Thank you, Chetna. Mark.
And talking to people in the community, there seems to be this perception that this is still up for discussion when it's not. It's done. It's voted on. We approved a budget for the library in the $62 million range. We approved the 21-year tax levy of 0.39 to go along to pay for the service increase rather than service maintenance. So it's a done deal. I mean, there are many contracts involved. We can't just back out. The next term of council can't easily just say, we don't want a library, so we're going to vote against it and not put it in there. That would be fiscally irresponsible. The fiduciary duties that we all have as councillors is to protect the city, and we have to move forward with the library. What it comes down to is the RFP. The next step is we are going to be going out to the developers with the RFP of saying, here's the design we want for the building. Here's the specs, here's the size, and here's our budget. What do you think? What are you going to come back with? And then we'll see what the actual reality comes. And that's why I keep talking about the inflationary pressures as being the biggest challenge that the next term of council is going to have. Absolutely, that is going to be a massive issue. And I'm just projecting what's going to happen to the library is probably not that different than what happened with the South End Community Center. We approved an $80 million budget. It came in the lowest bid at $121 million, or 50% higher. And I've been advocating for the South End Community Center for 8 years, but I was not going to say, let's go ahead with it anyway. Doesn't matter the cost, we have to proceed ahead with it. We have to be fiscally responsible. And just like the South End Community Center, we have to stop, pause, rethink, and reevaluate how we're going to proceed. If the library RFP comes back too high, we have to do the same thing. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And Dominique.
Great. So to Mark's point, the library has been voted on 88,000 square feet by a previous council in 2014's council. The fact that it's at within the Baker Street development was agreed upon by a previous council. So it's a turducken in a really important project that is going to revitalize the downtown. So the library, as part of Baker, is also leveraging $150 million of private capital. Two apartment buildings where 12% of the housing will be true, real affordable, not this attainable stuff, true affordable housing, a new civic square, underground parking, and the library. To Chetna's point, the current library is well past its functional use. It is not AODA compliant. And in fact, the library just posted a sign saying the elevator was out of service, which means there's no access to washrooms. That's a problem. So this building that is the head office for the library is important, needs to be revitalized. The budget at $62 million that I supported actually has a contingency built in, also includes all of the professional fees, fixtures, so everything in it. It's not strictly the construction. And at the time of the passing of that, the budget number, there was lots of room to talk about grants, a capital campaign. If the RFP comes back higher, they can do value engineering or phasing. But I think it is important to deliver on this capital project.
Time.
Thank you. Okay, so our next question has to do with public transit. It is generally understood that public transit use in cities must double by 2030 in order to meet climate goals and emission targets. The question is, what would you do to help us meet this target? And Chetna, please, will you start us off?
Thank you so much. I would definitely make sure that developments are being built that have direct routes so that people can safely walk or bike. So that means looking at the plan with like a realistic eye. Where we need lights, where is there going to be traffic issues? We need to plan for actual routes too, not ideal ones. You know, like a lot of times people, well, we need to know they're going to cut through that park. So we need to make sure that park has a light in it. We need to add more bike parking to a lot of transit hubs. As I said in a previous question, you know, the primary barrier we have to active transport is just available infrastructure. I think a lot more people would bike to work if there was something like a protected bike room, you know, showers, lockers, other similar amenities where bikers, runners, and walkers can seamlessly transition from their commute to their work day. So I would really advocate for transport infrastructure improvements, you know, like protected bike lanes and expanded bus routes. I would talk to the city staff. And that's one thing I always want to kind of reiterate is that I will have ideas and I will listen to the community and I'll throw things, but we have a city staff that are going to be looking into this stuff. And I would suggest to them, like, what about fare capping? You know, what about a 15-minute or better bus network? I think as somebody who, you know, has used transit for many, many years and kind of had to switch over to using the car a lot more when I had the kids. I know what we need is we need to improve bus frequency. We need to improve bus ticketing systems. We need to kind of increase passenger safety. And so I would kind of work on removing those primary barriers. A key thing though, is just building the infrastructure. If we build for cars, then we can only use cars. And we tell people that are on bikes and on buses that they're just not welcome. We don't even have sidewalks in a lot of the places around. We don't have sidewalks. You just kind of walk on this weird little curb. So it's important to build the infrastructure for it.
Thank you, Chetna.
Thank you.
Mark.
Thanks. So the last term of council, we conquered this. And this is the unanimously approved 10-year Guelph Transit Future Ready Action Plan. So it's done. You can look it up. You can read all about it. We looked at the Transit Business Service Review, and there was 12 recommendations. Those are being rolled into the plan. Extensive consultation over 20 months with the public. And it was very clear that frequency and convenience are the number one and two issues for transit. Because we're going to be adding on over that very long period, millions and millions of rides during that 10-year time that we're going to be transforming the transit system in numerous different ways, from getting away from the spoken hub to go to more to a grid, to improving what we're doing with the buses, changing up the routes, changing our on-demand service delivery. We are going to be adding on more higher service on major corridors and looking at other possibilities like transit priority signals, maybe exclusive lanes. One of the things that I brought forward whenever I took over as the chair of public services was looking at our affordable bus pass. So that is currently available to people on the lowest end of the income scale. And I didn't think it was good enough. And so we did a scaled system that can get the people with the least amount of fiscal availability down to $4 a month for a monthly bus pass. I mean, this is going to be wonderful. We're in a pilot project right now for 1 year. I'm hoping it can go forward. And then, of course, I was fully supportive of the free children rides as well under 12. So there's some of the things we can do to change the modal split.
Thank you. Dominique?
So to Mark's point, the previous council approved a $250 million 10-year plan on transit that is going to both electrify and expand our transit. It's a challenge, there's no question, because we want to increase the frequency and the coverage. We want to increase, you know, improve service and bring the cost down. So I think we've struck a good balance. And there's built-in mechanisms in the plan so that if the buses are, you know, at a certain level of being full, we'll add another bus. So there are ways to accelerate the most popular routes. I'd like us to look at more on demand in terms of serving folks who are taking the GO train so that people don't arrive on the GO train after the last bus has left. So I think that we're hearing a lot of interesting stuff at the door. I was madly looking for the census numbers for 2021, and the transportation ones aren't out yet. I think the key to getting people on transit is to invite people to use transit or active transportation for some of their travels, right? Get people to substitute some rides, because there's a very high percentage of people who actually commute within the city. And so if you can substitute, you know, going to the Storm game, going to the River Run Center, going to the movie theater, or going to the pub in the bus every once in a while, we actually start to move people onto transit in a way that works for them. I'd love to see a senior's day rate that would be reduced during the day when the buses aren't as full. I'd also really like to see us partner with high schools if there's a way to move out of orange school buses so that school board funding goes to city funding for transit.
Okay, thank you. Ken.
No, thank you for this question. And I think at the end of the day, it just comes down to better service delivery, full stop. And I think what we need to do is leverage on our successes. And I am a huge fan of the affordable bus pass. I think this pilot has been fairly successful, and I would love to see a full implementation of it down the road in the near future. And, you know, at the end of the day, increased ridership and dependability, it demands for better service delivery. You know, I've lived in Seattle and both in Vancouver, where transit is quite efficient in the North American context. And I really want to work with staff to increase the frequency of buses along the Gordon Street corridor and provide on the ground data from frequent consultation with residents to provide recommendations to staff on their work on the current Guelph Transit Future Ready Action Plan. And I think we can very much so incrementally work towards this goal by first encouraging more frequent ridership within our community. And we can do so in our ward with the frequency along the Gordon Street corridor. And also, I think Dominique alluded to this, but a simple initiative could be to just simply offer free transit for seniors over 60 during hours where there's traditionally lower ridership. This would be a fantastic initiative. And this is something that's been brought up time and time again from residents that I have knocked on doors with. And what we can do is encourage more ridership while eliminating the issue with buses being empty going down along Clare Road. It's a win-win for everybody and increases ridership and allows us to have better service delivery.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to go on to our next question. There has been considerable community discussion about reallocating some public resources that are currently assigned to the police to other agencies that are qualified in harm reduction in crisis contexts associated with homelessness, mental health, substance abuse, and related matters. The question I want to ask is, what are your views about this kind of reallocation of police resources? And Dominique, will you please start us off?
So I don't think that it's about reallocating necessarily, because if you're listening to people in the community, they're concerned about safety. Speeding, traffic, break-ins. We've had the police do all kinds of, significant work. They're working on sex trafficking. So I think the police do their budget in a way that meets their requirements, legislative, regulatory. I do think that we need to look at how we fund other harm reduction organizations, but that can be through a community benefit agreement. That can be through advocating to other levels of government. You know, even CMHC, Wellington Waterloo, or CMHA, Wellington Waterloo, had the impact program with Guelph Police. And that means that a mental health worker goes, but accompanied with an officer, because they don't know what they're walking into. So they do this partnership. So in August, I actually attended a meeting as part of the Guelph delegation to the municipalities of Ontario. And I asked the minister for additional funding to cover the hours from 12 to 8 a.m. So we need that funding. That's a mental health support. All the mental health and addictions should be covered by provincial healthcare. It is healthcare. So there is a level of advocacy for funding from other levels of government.
Thank you. Ken?
Yeah, I just want to second that point that Dominique made. I think what it comes down to is us as councillors being proactive in lobbying the province And just to be able to allocate some resources to grassroots community groups, to be able to do the work of mental health services and try to alleviate some of the costs that are incurred by the current Guelph police. What we can also do is encourage better behavior. And one of those things is crime prevention through environmental design. I think by just going about cost-effective beautification projects in our neighborhoods, especially along Downey Street, where there's a significant amount of speeding that goes on along major arteries, that could be a way in which we try to alleviate some of the pressures on our police force. And at the end of the day, I don't think it comes down to stripping the budget of the police. It comes down to just better creative interventions to encourage better social behavior. I think that's the way to go about it, practically speaking, in the municipality. And when it comes to higher level issues of mental health and social justice, what we need to do is form better alliances with our provincial partners and county partners as well.
Thank you, Ken. Mark?
Thank you. So tackling challenging issues, they involve complex solutions. And it's not as simple as just reallocating dollar. What people may not realize is the city of Guelph, our funding directly goes to police, but our funding does not go to all the social services wraparound in a direct way. Yes, we of course provide money to the county, roughly $22 million a year that we give to them for social services, but we don't control what happens. We don't decide on all the different initiatives. We have our input. The mayor sits on the social services committee at the county level, but it is the county that is responsible, that provincially designated body to handle social services. And that includes some of these mental health addictions and kind of maybe tangentially security issues that often people think, well, why don't the police just, you know, go away and we'll hire these other things to deal with it. And that's just not, it's not a direct line the way it happens. Municipally, that is not what happens in Guelph. The impact program that Dominique had mentioned, when we were in Ottawa talking to the ministers about that, to try to increase it from the, we're missing that 8 hours during the evening when 60% of the calls were coming in those 8 hours, we didn't have funding for it. And of course, as the city, as councillors, we want the police to get more funding for that impact program, which pairs up CMHA. But in the end, their application wasn't received. And one of the delegations that I was leading, we said, well, what's going on? It turns out that there was an administration error on the application. And when we brought that to the attention, we ended up having the province talking to the police department and getting that application redone.
Thanks. And Chetna.
I think this is such an important topic because, we know that in Ontario, Indigenous and Black people and people of color experience disproportionate harm through policing. And I don't think that that's because any of the individual police officers are causing that harm. I think it's because there is a systemic issue that we need to work on. So one of the things that I want to bring up, though, is that we can't just I want to come here and promise you everything in the world and just be like, yeah, let's, but we can't change the police budget because we're not in charge of that. There's a board. And if we go ahead and take away a bit of their money, they're just going to run to the province and they're going to say, well, mommy said no. Or daddy said no. Mommy, you say yes. Right. And so they're just going to run from one parent to another and say, I know you're going to support me, mom. And so what we do have the power to do, though, is that we can try to save lives by change these statistics by changing the structures that embed the racism, the discrimination and the violence against racialized people into our methods and institutions. And I want to remind people, this is something that is going to help police officers. Every police officer that I've talked to, and we have a bunch of them in Ward 6 that are out there and helping people on the streets, this helps them because they can be free to respond to crimes if they're not taking care of someone in a mental health crisis. They're not trained to take care of someone in a mental health crisis. So we need to invest in community resources and community-run initiatives from these marginalized groups and community programs. The main thing, though, is we need to change how we view, how we approach, and how we address the drug overdose crisis. And why I can't remove funds from the police, I would absolutely advocate for not increasing their budget unless we look at the fact that that money should be going to the people who need it. And like I said, it's just going to help us. When my car gets broken into, the police can come and help me with it because they're not busy dealing with somebody who's having.
Thank you, Chetna.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask a question about democracy. It has been widely stated that the province's ministerial zoning orders and the strong mayor's legislation are contrary to healthy local democratic processes. Please tell us what your views are on this topic. And Mark, would you like to start us off, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly, if MZOs are used incorrectly, that's the ministerial zoning orders, where it bypasses the normal planning procedures. If those are used, you know, to kind of pat your developer friends on the backs to get some housing pushed through, maybe not the best use of it. But in the case of Doline, the city of Guelph, we are so thankful of the MZO process that came from that. This is something that protects our groundwater, that there is, I don't want to say too much because there is still a lot of in-camera discussions there. But let's just say that it was very important that we shut down the Doline Quarry. And the way to get that done was to convert into residences. And that had to be done quickly, expediently, to protect groundwater. And it was an MZO that made that happen. That is exactly why that MZO was there. So I 100% support it if it's being used in the correct way. Now, regarding the strong mayor powers that can come in, I can have an opinion. In the end, it doesn't really make too much of a difference. That's Premier Ford's government that gets to decide if it's going to be implemented or not. We don't get a say in that. We don't get to say no. It's just, we can't opt out of voting on planning issues. You know, say, oh no, we just don't want to do that. We can't opt out of having this legislation put in. Now, in terms of what the mayor would do if that powers were come in, again, not really my to say about. There were some particular issues if I was to look at from a political and personal lens. I like some aspects of it. I don't like other aspects of it. But in the end, I don't really have a lot of say in it because it's above our pay grade. So yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Thanks.
Thanks. Chetna.
I don't even think I'm going to need the 90 seconds for this. We shouldn't have strong mayor legislation for this. The point of city council is to take the voices of the citizens and go and implement those changes. The point is not to say, oh, one person has a vision and so we're going to go and do that. And luckily, we know that the Council of Guelph agrees with that. So boo. And I will scream loudly in the streets that this is not cool and this is not democracy and this is not how we should be making decisions.
Okay, thank you. Ken.
Yeah, no, MZOs just across the planning and urban design community is something quite controversial because at the end of the day, it overrides a lot of the public consultation and due diligence that the city goes about making decisions on behalf of the citizens that we're ultimately serving. And yeah, while I can have a personal opinion on the MZOs, it is a reality that we are, as a city, in fact, a creature of the province. And that's a saying that essentially means that a lot of the jurisdiction and responsibilities that are offloaded to us is in fact given to us by the province. Now, a lot of people, especially the ones that I've met, are quite disillusioned by the MZO process, and rightfully so. As a city, we need to be more united and work in more of a nonpartisan fashion when it comes about dealing with development. We don't necessarily need to have more consultation. We need to have more proactive consultation. And if we aren't able to do that, especially with Bill 109 coming in, we're essentially going to be forfeiting our rights as a city when it comes to running our own affairs. And we certainly don't want the province to be going about making high level decisions on behalf of ordinary citizens. So I don't like the MZOs, but it's the reality that we need to be sober on, and that means we need to be more proactive with our consultation and be more united in the next term of council.
Thank you. Dominique.
For the MZO in the case of Guelph, that it was actually useful and helpful, and that the Doline Quarry being brought into the boundary for the city of Guelph will then be subject to all the same sort of planning processes. So in our case, it was helpful, but we had support of council and support of county and the townships. That's great. Strong mayors, full on, Chetna, boo, 100%. I was a House of Commons page, a tour guide, a parliamentary intern. I was a DC intern. I love democracy. And in case people aren't familiar with strong mayors, it is currently applied to Toronto and Ottawa, but could be extended to other municipalities. It gives the mayor sole responsibility to bring in a budget. So if you have sort of a, you know, drain the swamp kind of mayor, they could come in, do anything with the budget. It allows them to reorganize departments. So somebody could come in, fire everybody from the CAO to the general manager level, which could cause significant delays and would certainly cause some, you know, HR lawsuits. They have a veto power at council that can only be reversed by a two-thirds majority, which pretty much neuters a city council. So we need a mayor and a mayoral system You know, we don't have government in opposition at City Council. It's a horseshoe. We're supposed to be consulting and trying to understand the will of people and to move forward in a consensus or at least conciliatory way. So full on, not a fan of strong mayors at all.
Okay, thank you. We are now going to move to a few chat questions. One person is asking how or if you will strengthen relationships with Indigenous residents and neighbors in Guelph, and how will you use your voice as a councillor in a municipality to help push the other levels of government to meet the truth and reconciliation calls to action? Oh, sorry, Ken, will you start us off, please?
Well, I made an effort on my campaign website to just list out clearly what my values are and ingredients for action in order to go about the role of city councillor. And I made it quite clear. We need to first be humble in our approach, have integrity with what we say and how we go about making decisions and promises to the people. And we also need to go about our duty with excellence and ingenuity. So being a city councillor, we don't have many vested powers within us, but there is soft power and influence in how we go about conducting our office. So I bring that up because I have experience working with Indigenous people out in BC. I've been to Northern British Columbia, been to First Nations Reserve called Klumptu, and looked at ways in which they go about economic development. And this kind of experience and also relationships is what I would love to bring to the table when it comes to working with our Indigenous partners at the City of Guelph. I think there are a lot of creative beautification projects and capital projects that could use an Indigenous perspective. And I would love to be able to work in consultation and collaboration with these folks to be able to go about bridging our current culture and past heritage as well, to bring Indigenous voices at the table.
Thank you. Dominique?
Thanks. So first, I think it's important for councillors to be aware of what the TRC recommendations are, in addition to the recommendations in the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls report. I attended the vigil the other night, and it's moving. I think it's our responsibility to do that. I attended a number of things on the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation. So I think it's important for us to be humble in our approach to understand how much we don't know. So I would like to understand more about what our treaty responsibilities are. And then I think we look at our own mechanisms within the city first. You know, I'm proud that we have a space for sacred fire. I think there's room for consultation with Indigenous people to tell us what they think would be respectful, helpful within all of the consultations, not as one delegate, but really as a partner. I personally asked Guelph Police to, in a conversation, so I don't need to do all this stuff publicly, ask them how they are meeting the recommendations for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. I think they have a significant role to play. There are recommendations that are municipal. And then in terms of looking at other levels of government, you know, it's funny, I knocked at a door and a woman said, you know, I teach at Sir Isaac Brock School and we teach about reconciliation, but we're on Colonial Drive. And there's Colonial Park. So I reached out to some of the Indigenous folks and said, is this something you want to tackle? They said, we want to tackle housing. So I think we need to be in service to our Indigenous community and have them lead.
Thank you, Dominique. Chetna.
Yeah, so I was very, very lucky that throughout university, I paid for a lot of my university by working at Gisadalmukamik, which is a native daycare that is run by Indigenous people. And it was really monumental in opening my eyes because I was really blessed that they started inviting me to their sacred fires and I was able to learn some Anishinaabe. And the main thing that I kind of picked up from all of that, from that those years of experience, was that it has to come from a self-determination place. You know, like the Indigenous communities need self-determination. And so if we want to kind of bridge the gap, the conversation can't come from us. I actually just went to the Guelph Civic Museum last night. And one of the things he was talking about is that it can't come from the top down. It has to come from the bottom up. And so in order for us to be able to communicate, we need to communicate in their language, which means allowing them to have their language. And so, you know, making sure that we have resources for Anishinaabe. One of the best parts was that at the daycare, we would make sure that every week we would have an elder come and start teaching their language, because a lot of your culture is held within your language. A lot of the way that you structure your grammar and the way that you kind of speak about issues is through that language. And so if you lose your language, you lose a lot of your culture. And so I think a lot of it is just making sure that we have spaces within the city that we are asking, not for us to organize it, but we are asking them, come and give me your voice and what can I do to support you. And I would just like, I would go and I would make sure other people were going, and I would tweet about it and you know, make sure that we had lots of conversations with them and lots of what's the word, support, you know, like where you know, I tell people, go, it's going to be great fun. Or a bunch of great sadness too, which is a lot of what last night was. And we just have to be ready for that as well. But
time to
have the conversations. Thank you.
Mark.
Thanks for the question. So as a counselor, there are many different issues and files that we might not individually as a counselor be aware of, like planning, for example, engineering, traffic management. These are not areas I'm an expert in. And certainly Indigenous relations is absolutely something I'm not an expert in, which is why we have to rely very heavily on the staff. I mean, we have professional staff members that it is their job to understand the ramifications, implications, understand the relationship building, understand the Truth and Reconciliation Report, and what the requirements are that we can meet from the federal government and the provincial government, as well as how can we go beyond that. And I know that in Guelph, we have been making a lot of real improvements on Indigenous relations. It's not perfect, but talking to senior management at staff regularly, they're moving towards stuff. And it's a learning process for them as well, but they are by far the council's best resource for understanding how the city and council should be able to have stronger relationships with the Indigenous communities. And that's something I've always relied on them for that. And I'll continue to do so, because it's just not something I understand a lot myself. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to ask another question that's come through the chat. I recently heard our current mayor call out some councillors that voted down a couple of housing projects, even though city staff approved the projects. Were either of the current board 6 councillors involved in that decision? That's one question. And for everybody, what constitutes a supportable development project? Okay, so Dominique, would you like to start us off, please?
Sure. So the mayor is referring to 361 Whitelaw, which was a project for about 700 units. The project wanted to use a 1 parking space per unit ratio, that ratio based on a future comprehensive zoning bylaw review that is making that recommendation. That has never come to council yet for approval. So I don't like the assumptions in the study, and I'm happy to provide the study. I think the comparators are terrible. I don't like that they were predicating the parking ratio on something that's not approved yet. And I understand very much so what the impact of overflow parking will be. So there will be a development for 700 people who will have more than 700 cars, I guarantee. And then there will be overflow parking in the surrounding neighborhoods, okay, which is problematic. So I voted against it. I was not alone. The mayor's chair of council is supposed to support the decisions of his council. And so I find that troubling, that he called people out. So I am for development that is within the planning bounds, the height, the zoning, the requirements. I've supported many development applications, but I think we need to meet the needs of the residents today, respect the surrounding neighborhoods, and we can convert those extra parking spaces in the future for cargo bikes or urban agriculture or whatever you want to do. But I have supported thousands of units of housing in the city. Could I just, because it's really focused on me, this question, because Councillor McKinnon didn't vote against it. There's 6,000 units that developers could build in this city today. So we have a very expensive planning exercise that lays the parameters for development. And all I'm asking for is for developers to follow those.
Okay, thank you. Mark.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So people need to understand whenever an application comes towards council, the final application will either give a recommendation to approve or reject from our planning staff. Occasionally it comes back with rejection. There was one just recently on Gordon Street that was recommended to reject. There was one downtown that was recommended to reject because they had asked for something that was too high. And whenever a recommendation comes for it, every individual councillor has the right to say they agree or they disagree. My personal opinion is that if there is a solid planning rationale that the planning staff gets behind it, it would have to be exceptional for me to vote against it. And some councillors, you know, even though the totality of council may approve something, you'll often get one or two councillors, maybe more, maybe a majority, who will vote against something that is approved by planning staff. And I think that there would have to be exceptional reasons for me to do that. And in the last term of council, any application that's come forward that staff has recommended on planning rationale, I have voted for in favor of everything. The one that was mentioned, particularly on Whitewall Law, that was an overwhelming majority that voted against it. And what the problem that produces is when we reject staff's recommendation, it's easily appealable at that point, almost guaranteed to get appeal, which will cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend it because city staff can't defend council's rejection of their approval. We have to go to outside legal assistance. And furthermore, it just delays and delays and delays. The one on White Lawn in particular is going to cost millions of dollars to Guelph residents because it just pushed back the development building time. And when they're buying, now they're hitting inflation. So that's not something that I supported, but every decision, every council mix individually. Thanks.
Thank you. Ken.
Well, I think a lot of residents, myself included, are quite frustrated at how divisive planning issues and development issues have become. Like, neighbors are pitted against developers. NIMBY is being thrown around like it's breakfast. And it's quite unfortunate and does a disservice to planning staff and also our city's reputation. We can't have development be overrided and go towards the Ontario Land Tribunal. That's unacceptable. First, what we need to do is build more confidence in our planning staff and also work side by side with them to deliver more proactive community consultation. That's a role in which we can be effective as councillors at the outset, and we can flesh out the issues of parking density, you know, the amount of FSI is being proposed and units to parking ratios. There are a lot of creative solutions that can be readily solved at the site plan level when an application comes in. And what we need right now more than ever is for us to work with staff, work with residents, so issues and rhetoric like this doesn't become such a divisive topic. We're in the business of implementation at the city, and if we can't get implementation right, we're going to forfeit our responsibilities, and ultimately you're going to see more interventions from the province come down on us. And that's not what we want at the city of Guelph here.
Thank you. Chetna?
Yeah, you know, I don't think anybody, we need housing. I don't think anybody is against development. All we're saying is, you know, build right. We have a strategic plan that says that we are working together and that we're sustaining. We have a community plan that says we're going to protect our environment and create value. So we have to make decisions that make sense. And the key thing that a councillor can do is be engaged with our community. And so if we recognize something and we look at an application and say, oh, you know, based on what I know of my ward and based on all the conversations I'm having, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work because of these reasons. We may sometimes have to say, love and appreciate the recommendation, but unfortunately I have to vote no against this. And I think that all of us want to make sure that people get housed. We just need to remember that the decisions we make now are going to affect us 20 years from now. And we can't be making decisions based on what's been working or what we think is going to work. We need to look ahead. Guelph is future ready, right? And so we need to make sure we're actually living up to that future ready goal. And make sure that when we make decisions, we can play and explore, we can move around freely. It's all part of our plan. So we just need to look at the application, look at the plans that we have as a city and say, does it align? It doesn't. then, you know, it's not going to work. And it's not like we don't have, we have developers that do align with those visions. And that's the main thing I want to make clear. This is not a big ask. We have applications that are coming in that are absolutely in line with our values. And so we can't just say yes to the first person that comes. We have to say, well, hold on a second. We also have this other one here, and this looks a little bit better because of this. So.
Hey, thank you. So the time has come for us to hear some final thoughts from our candidates, and we have just enough time. You can all give 2 minutes. You all have 2 minutes to give. So let us start with Dominique, please.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about social justice and well-being writ large, which talks about our physical and mental health, our environmental responsibilities, democracy. So please get out and vote on October 24th or in the advance polls. The voter turnout in 2018 was 38%, I think 36 or 38%. We have to do better than that. Please give your counselors a strong mandate as well to represent you. So the democratic piece is critical. We want strong families. We want strong communities. I think to Ken's point, we want to celebrate what is great about Guelph and build on that. And the best way to do that is through collaborations. So I am looking forward to returning to council with your support for what will be a difficult term of council. We are going to have to try and be creative. We are definitely going to face inflationary pressures. We are going to have to set priorities, and then we're going to have to work together to keep the important big blocks moving forward. So I'm asking for your vote on October 24th to continue to be your voice for Ward 6. I have shown that I am definitely listening to people. I have sent more than 70 newsletters on a monthly basis to let people know what's happening at council, to invite people into the conversation. I want to continue to do that. So I want to hear what your priorities are, and I will continue to fight for smart development that balances growth and green spaces, that meets the needs of today and is adaptable for the future. Thanks.
Thank you. Mark.
Well, thank you for moderating tonight, Tanya, and thanks to the other candidates for the engagement tonight. This October election is about the best path forward as the city is faced with the inflationary issues, affordability pressures, massive intensification, improved service delivery, and issues touching upon inclusion and social well-being. And this is why experience matters. Ward 6 residents expect and deserve council leadership that's fully informed and ready to govern on day one. You want results and you want stability. You want rationality and facts to guide a councillor's decision, evidence-based decision-making, and not rhetoric and populist voting. You want a councillor who will champion compassionate, community-focused initiatives that will lift up and support residents living precariously. You expect your ward representative to be pro-housing, fiscally responsible, detailed-oriented, and engage with the community. You want your councillor to continue governing the city with an eye on affordability, sustainability, and engagement, balancing service improvements and value for your tax dollars. And yes, of course, you want a councillor who will continue building consensus with the other ward representatives so we can finally get the South End Community Center built. I'm Mark McKinnon. My council resume over the past 8 years speaks for itself. And I'm here to apply for the job. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark. Ken.
You know, thank you for this discussion first and foremost. And I just want to share with everyone, just shortly after submitting my nomination back in May, that I've spent time working with a strong team, developing a strong community-driven platform, filled with practical ideas and initiatives for our communities. And this is experience and practical knowledge from my work as an urban designer and design practitioner who works closely with city staff on a daily basis. With my team, we've drawn over hundreds of people to our events and provide people with practical solutions that appeal to people across the political spectrum. You know, as a city, we are mandated by the province to accommodate for growth, and Guelph is growing significantly faster than any other Ontario municipality. And half of the city's growth is taking place in Ward 6. So for us as city councillors, we have an vested interest and responsibility to make sure that our conversations are facilitated in the right way. It'll be very important that we as a city respond proactively to Bill 109 and ensure that housing supply is affordable and equitable. There's an influx of development activity taking place here and now, and what we need is real experience, practical solutions, and we also need a unifier to be able to work with all councillors and the mayor to make sure that we deliver solutions for our citizens. It would be an honor for me to represent you here in Ward 6 in the next term of council, and I would be very much humbled by your support. And thank you for this time, and I look forward to talking to some of you at the door.
Thank you, Ken. And Chetna.
Thank you. You know, we can build a great city together by talking to and thinking about everyone's needs. I'm really thrilled to talk about these issues because the fact is that we don't have time anymore to ignore them. Access to housing that we can afford is essential to a productive workforce, and we know that low density housing is expensive to serve. So we need to quickly build housing stock to lower our cost of living, and we need to do it responsibly. Pick developers who build houses that use renewable energy, recycle water, and give us access to natural light and fresh air. We have the resources, we have the evidence from staff that we can shift to a circular economy, to multimodal transit, and a city that's built on engagement. We can ensure that we have spark park space and that we are able to explore this beautiful city that we have. I'm easy to talk to, and I will listen to you. I have a degree in urban anthropology and a degree in early childhood education. I have years of professional experience in executive change management and years of volunteering and learning about Guelph's municipal issues, which is all to say, I would be good at this. I would be an excellent and dedicated city councillor, and you should vote for me because I can guide us through healthy growth. As we grow, will the character of Guelph be a vibrant city that is full of communities and involves citizens, or are we going to be a disconnected and miserable sprawl? I know what I'm voting for on October 24th, and I really hope that people join me.
Okay, thank you very much. I would like to thank Chetna, Mark, Dominique, and Ken for being here tonight and for your commitment to Guelph. I thank everyone who has participated tonight for taking the time to learn about the candidates and some of the major issues facing Guelph today. If we didn't get to your question, then please contact the candidates. Their information is on the City of Guelph website. This event is the result of the collaboration between several community groups in Guelph, and we thank each of them. The advanced poll starts on October 8th, and remember to vote on the 24th. And just to remind you, there will be a mayoral debate in person on October the 11th at 7 p.m. at the Dublin Street Church at 68 Suffolk Street West. Thank you very much, everybody, and have a great night.